You are now listening to the Experience Magazine podcast in association with CEIA. Thank you for listening. This podcast is only made possible by listeners like you. We appreciate you, and we hope that you continue to experience with us. Special guest for this episode is Executive Director of Cooperative Education at the University of Waterloo, Ross Johnston. Ross is accountable for ensuring an effective and appropriate quality work integrated learning journey for students at the University of Waterloo, which currently has 23,500 co-op enrolled students. He also ensures cooperative education meets and exceeds co-op employment rates, while maintaining and enhancing employer relationships with over 7,100 organizations across more than 65 countries. To achieve these objectives, Ross oversees the evolution of best practices and continuous improvement of the co-op experience for students and employers. To ensure academic integration and learning outcomes within the pedagogical model of cooperative education, Ross manages the ongoing faculty and campus partnerships. Ross joined the University of Waterloo in 2009 as Director of Employment Relations before becoming the Executive Director in 2017. Previous roles include Director of Attraction and Retention with MTS Allstream, Founder of Talent and Management and Career Advice Consultancy, and CIBC Senior Director of Recruitment Operations across all divisions globally. Prior to living in Canada, Ross was Head of Training and Development for a UK financial institution. Ross has extensive experience in recruitment, strategic HR, change management, sales and business development, and has an executive MBA from Bradford University School of Management in the UK. Ross has been a regular participant and presenter at CEIA conferences and has been a board member since 2017, where he currently serves as the Vice President of the Global Network. In June 2019, Ross was named President for Experiential and Work Integrated Learning Ontario, EWO, and is also a current board member of the Cooperative Education and Work Integrated Learning Canada, CEWIL.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Experience Magazine podcast. I'm Eric Allenson. I'm alongside my friend and co-host, Professor Michael Sharp. Mike, it is good to see you and be in the pseudo broadcast studio again as we continue to adapt and make changes to our podcast and our show as a result of some of the challenges that have been imposed on us during the pandemic. But it's great to see you.
Great to see you too. I love what you're wearing today, Eric. It's very fitting, the theme of this show. I will say that calling me a friend and colleague may be a bit strong. I would accentuate colleague over friend at this point. Perhaps that'll change in the future.
Maybe acquaintance then is more appropriate.
Acquaintance. No, I'm totally kidding. I'm really excited to be back too, Eric. This is our really since relaunching after the pandemic. We have a new platform, new producers, a great roster of guests coming up here. The first one is on today. We'll introduce him here in just a moment. But real quick, check in with you, Eric. What is new in your world?
Things are going well, Mike. Yeah, let's see. Continuing to work in the information technology space, and I have to say, Mike, and fully acknowledge this, supporting students that are IT and computing oriented has been a blessing during this difficult time, because I feel like it's an industrial sector that has been, least affected by some of the hurdles that we've experienced. So it's been great working with students, modifying, plans of experiential learning and helping students engage in some form of co-op employment in many cases from an online space or from a virtual space. So, I'm fortunate to work with good partners at an institution here at UC that seems to recognize the value of EL and the flexibility of it. So we've been pretty responsive in terms of modifying and adapting during the challenging times. So Mike, how about you? How are things going?
Things are going well. Eric may be busier than I've ever been. I think a parallel can be drawn to my world of service learning to your world of IT, which is the pandemic has sort of forced all of us to rethink how we do what we do and why we do what we do. So I've been reading about your program, Eric, and it has literally exploded in very, very good ways. And I could say the same thing for service learning that, because many of our community partners in the not-for-profit sector were really, really hard hit through the pandemic, they've never had more needs than they do now. And so there are some silver linings, I think, to COVID-19. And what I'm hoping is that there's going to be some legacy of things that we learned through the pandemic that we can carry on after the pandemic is over, which is hopefully soon. But thank you for asking, Eric. Why don't we go ahead and get into our guest today, Ross Johnston from the University of Waterloo. Ross, thank you for coming to the show and welcome. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. Thank you so much, Mike and Eric. It's great to be on the call with you. You're right. This has been really interesting and challenging times. Hasn't been made any easier with the good old winter north of the border, but it's good to actually get some airtime with you and an opportunity to chat about some of this stuff.
Well, now, Ross, if correct me if I'm wrong here, but that is not a true Canadian accent, my friend. You are hailing from a different region of the world, is that right?
I certainly am, Eric. I was born and raised in a small village called Fyvie, Fyvie, in Scotland, in the UK. And sort of started my career over there and took my young family, as it was at the time, over to Canada in 2004.
Fantastic. That's awesome. We are truly a global network. And I think, if anything, this is evidence of that.
Absolutely. We certainly are. You can't, it's funny because I spent some time working down in England. And I've spent, quite some time since 2004, 16, 17 years in Canada now, and I can't seem to shake the accent.
Ross, it might be one of those things that you just have forever. It's so embedded in your DNA that there's no way to shake it. So, Ross, the University of Waterloo is a pretty famous cooperative education institution. And so we're really happy that you're really our first guest on this new platform for Experience Magazine podcast. Can you just tell us a little bit about the university and perhaps maybe a little bit about your cooperative education or work integrated learning program?
Yeah, for sure, Mike. I was extremely fortunate to join the organization and probably didn't realize at the time just how steeped it was in cooperative education. The university was formed back in the 1950s, and it basically started with co-op in its DNA. The founders felt that there was a need, they had an industrial background themselves, and that there was a need to try and enable young talent to come in and learn professional skills, particularly in engineering to begin with, that could translate into the workforce and really support the local community. So to be able to do that, they totally understood that there was the benefit of students being able to earn money as they were going through their education to help pay for that, but then also to learn experiences so that they'd be able to hit the ground running when they started. So when I joined back in 2009, I'll give you an example of just the growth that we've had. We've are averaging about 3,500 students going out in a work term. So students will go out in three different work terms throughout a year, potentially. So we have winter, spring, and fall terms. 16 weeks tends to be what we would aim for in a traditional work term, but with COVID, that has reduced down to 8 weeks currently. But that said, we grew from 3,500 students, and we're over 9,000 students now at the moment going out on work terms. So the growth has been exponential. The department grew from about 60 people when I joined it to, I think, across the portfolio now, we have over 200. And wow, it's grown beyond just co-op as well, Mike. We, I report through to our Associate Provost for Cooperative and Experiential Education, Dr. Nora McRae. Some of your listeners may have heard some of the presentations that she's provided. But in support of Nora and the work that we do, we're sort of split into quite a number of units. We have a cooperative education, which I'm responsible for, and roughly about just over 70% of our students are in co-op as an institution. We have a business unit that supports the whole portfolio, so that's in project management, right through to IT, data analytics and statistics. We have a Centre for Career Action that does really important work in enabling particularly those first work term students to have a good shot at an opportunity of attaining that first work experience, which is always extremely crucial. We have brand and strategic initiatives that focused on our building our brand and making sure that the strategies that we work with align with the broader university. We have world programs that's really starting to show some growth. And, you know, I think because of COVID, for example, flexibility has been key. And sometimes the rigidity of co-op doesn't work for everyone. So there's a real expansion there in terms of work integrated learning programs and also enabling and supporting those students who aren't in co-op at the University of Waterloo to potentially graduate with still having achieved a work integrated learning experience that will help them for the future. And also within that group, there's a focus on professional development programs. So students will take some professional development courses when they're out on a work term that really helps enable them on things like problem solving, overcoming communication challenges, things that they might encounter in the workplace itself. And we have a research arm, which is the Work Learn Institute, which Dr. Judine Pretty again has provided several things through the CEIA as well. So I think, you know, we're really grateful for that support because it's a trigger for some of the work that we go and do. So it's really been exponential growth, Mike, and it's great to be a part of it.
Now, Ross, you hit on something I'm particularly interested in, and it's this idea of the evolution and the change within the space of cooperative and work integrated learning. And I think you hit on this key point, right? That we were seeing some of these changes occur minimally, and then the pandemic hit a year ago. And I feel like we had to ramp up more and more opportunities for flexibility and to get away from this really rigid structure of traditional co-op. So I'm curious to know, you know, what are the ways in which Waterloo has changed the space within cooperative education and work integrated learning?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Eric. I think, you know, we some of this thinking was starting to happen before COVID, to be fair. We had set up through Anne Fannin, who's our director for World Programs. Anne and her team had set up what was called the EDGE program. And that, again, was trying to appeal to those students that had decided for one reason or another not to take co-op, because co-op isn't for everyone. It's a big commitment. It can have a lot of stress potentially attached to it. And it's not necessarily for all students. But that said, what we learned through co-op is that there is the benefit of having some form of work-related experience so that when you graduate, it can open up more doors for you, it can give you more direction career, and it can give you a good foundation to build that potential career from. So what the EDGE program was doing was enabling smaller sort of work-related experiences, say around about 2 weeks potentially, but also with some reflection and some project and pieces like that, that would enable a student to attain some sort of exposure to learning, integrate that in with the work experience, and at the same time reflect on their learning and how it's applied in the workplace. So that was really the start. Where we're moving from now is looking at how some potential work integrated learning can come into play again because of COVID, where employers are trying to find their way on recovery, potentially reestablishing their business, building things up potentially slower because they don't have the financial capacity to support talent, but they need the talent to grow. So looking at what that might look like, is it related to some form of, again, project-related work that can overcome problems for employers that will enable them to sort of find their way in terms of recovery? So these are just some of the smaller pieces, I would say, that we're working on. But it's something, Eric, that's evolving very, very quickly. It's getting into potential micro-credentials, potential badges as well. These are all elements that we're looking into.
Ross, that's very impressive. And I could see Eric's ears perk up a little bit there. I mean, Eric's been trying to push this more sophisticated approach to co-op for several years. And he was recently very successful with finally getting people convinced that the traditional model of co-op works for some majors, but not all. And so it's very interesting to hear that even in Canada and maybe other parts of the States that other institutions are moving in that direction also. So Ross, according to your bio, you work with a wide range and a high number of employers. I think it's like 7,065 countries. And, you know, as we've seen through the pandemic and even prior to that, the globe is becoming more and more connected almost by the day. And so through the lens of Will, experiential learning, work integrated learning, cooperative education, do you see any trends emerging in the field or even maybe even trends emerging with your employer base of things that they're looking for, things that they want to work on?
It's interesting, Mike, because all of us have got a desire to get back to normal. But what will normal look like in the future? We haven't really defined what that is because it's a move in space at the moment. I was chatting with a couple of colleagues in different institutions up here in Canada just yesterday. And what they were sharing with me was that, you know, they were seeing recovery in terms of job postings that was going to be available to their students to attain some form of work-related experience. But what they weren't seeing necessarily was the uptake for some of these jobs, particularly when they were in person. So there was, I think, some hesitancy at the moment to take those in-person opportunities with more of a preference to work in a virtual space. So as vaccines roll out and we sort of get stabilized health-wise to be able to work in more in-person related environments, it'll be interesting to see how much that changes or if it's going to be actually more blended approach to work, which is what some of us feel may well be the case, but it's still got to really play out. In terms of for international, it really does, through virtual, make the world a smaller place because it does enable that connection. It will create diversity of teams if organizations are willing to take that faithful step, because you will be able to connect 24/7 with folks across the globe. And that's huge, particularly in different markets that organizations might be looking to play in. But it's also extremely beneficial for the final outcomes that's delivered, either be it in a service-related industry or be it related in something that's even tied in with manufacturing. So what we have seen is obviously a lot of our students are still overseas. We have enabled, there's some that are back returning on campus. But that said, it has opened up the opportunity for more of these students to attain work within their own environments. It's interesting because country by country, there's different cultures related to how open industries are to co-op. and the element of having to pay a student to come in and do a job. So, you know, that's something that we're trying to figure ways in working with. And because of COVID, there has been more openness to enable students to work without any salary. We always strive for some form of income, but to just enable them to get that work experience, there has been a little bit more openness to do that because that is reflective on certain countries. But I think in the future, I would see far more blended approaches to work. I even see more blended approaches to learning. That's what we're seeing an indication as well, and how programs might be set up in the future. So we are heading back to some form of normality, but it's going to be interesting to see just exactly what that looks like in the future.
Ross, one of the things that really struck me about you and Waterloo is the scale at which your institution operates. So from my understanding, it's the biggest co-op program in the world. And you have over 23,500 co-op students on an annual basis, which is so massive. And one of the things I'm curious about, and I know some of the listeners are curious about, is when you have a program at that scale, what are the mechanisms you have in place to really ensure the program quality and the students are having all of those really essential components of that WILL experience? You're talking about, you know, placement or on-the-job training and the reflection piece and coming back and being able to integrate that learning with what they've taken in the classroom.
Yeah, it's definitely a large operation, Eric. And as I shared with you earlier, it's something that just continues to grow. The university does highlight it as a strategic advantage. So it leverages it as much as it can. So, you know, even when during COVID, there's been some reticence with students to actually come to campuses to learn in the future. We've seen continued exponential growth. That said, there are some large institutions across the globe. I think there's one in Germany, for example, that's potentially larger. But for the type of what we do, we're definitely up there in the world for sure. In terms of the whole sense of quality, one of the things that we're really excited about and have been launching is something that we're calling the Future Ready Talent Framework. And this is basically learning competencies that we're hoping will be able to be applied into program design at the front end. It has the potential to take it into aligning with job postings so that in the future, when employers are looking to post jobs, they can point to certain competencies that they're looking for that relate to this framework that the students would be actually involved in working towards. So there could be some matching there for us in the future where a student will say, I'm looking for a job that does X, Y, Z, and they'll be able to see that within the job posting. So it'll help with the selection criteria as well. That's also going to be built into the reflection component for the ongoing learning journey for the student in terms of how they what they encountered during that work experience that relates to those competencies that they wanted to improve. It'll also tie in as well with regards to the whole evaluation. So for the employer at the moment, we do have an evaluation form. We've just tweaked it so that it has changed to be more reflective of the Future Ready Talent Framework as we roll it out. So the employers will be assessing the students from their work-related experience in relation to those competencies. This then has got the benefit of potentially tying into lifelong learning beyond when the student actually graduates. So when they graduate, there's the potential where they can leave with their own personal development plan that links into these competencies for ongoing development. And then it could be further benefits for the university as well to continue to engage with alumni in their ongoing learning after that.
Ross, that's incredible. If I could just jump in for a minute, Mike, I love hearing about this Future Ready Talent Framework and the fact that, so I work in the tech space, and it sounds like what you almost have here is this maybe akin type of application to like an applicant tracking system on the employer side, right? Where you have this ATS system that matches keywords or competencies with a position requisition, right? What you're saying is you have this framework that you're developing that can work on your end and on your side to kind of match the competencies, the skills, and what the students are looking for in that experience and make some really pointed recommendations for them, which is incredibly, incredibly cool and utilizes a high level of, you know, data analysis to create those types of calculations. So that's fascinating and something I'd even love to chat with you about at a later time. Really cool.
Yeah, absolutely, Eric. And you know, as I was explaining to you the how things have grown at Waterloo and how we now have this portfolio that Dr. Nora McCrae leads, this is the outcome of some of the research work that Dr. Judine Pretty has done in basically looking at various competency models and coming up with what were the most common sort of elements that really made sense for us to focus in on. And that's what's really created this framework. So there's sort of four main areas to it. One is in expanding expertise, where you'll find information and data literacy, technological literacy, subject matter related knowledge and skills. You have developing self, which focuses in on self-assessment, self-management, lifelong learning and career management. You have building relationships, which, as we all know, is key to really anyone's future going forward. So it relates to communication, collaboration and influence, cross-cultural agility, and design and deliver solutions. So your critical thinking, your innovation mindset, and your implementation. So those are the sort of competencies that this framework's built upon. And everything flows from there. So as I say, it has the potential to go into be applied into course design and programming, right through to the types of jobs that students will be aligned with, because they'll be able to look at what's the things that interest them in the future. They'll get ongoing assessment when they're out in work-related experiences that will highlight to them the areas that they still need to develop. Because as we all know with learning, and particularly in the professional world, everybody tends to stick to comfort zones and often doesn't actually address what some of the key needs are. So this is a mechanism to try and help flush those out and create a supportive framework around enabling students to continue to improve.
Ross, that is so impressive. And even though I think I've known you since 2017 when you joined CEIA, perhaps we've never had a chance to really talk about the nuances that you've been able to accomplish with your team at Waterloo. But this is what is my favorite thing about the academy, higher education, is that there's so much to learn. You know, we even as universities get trapped in our silos and think that we know the best way to do this and we know how it should run. And sometimes it's difficult to learn from other institutions, which is why an organization like CEIA is so important. So, Ross, could you tell us a little bit about your role with CEIA? And maybe if you know of anything really cool or really exciting coming down the pipeline here, share that with our listeners.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks, Mike. Whenever I joined Waterloo, I think it was 2009, I think 2010 was the first conference that I attended with CIA. And the thing that struck me was the sense of community and support. I kind of felt that warmth straight off the bat. So, you know, that was something that was really helpful for me because I was new into the post-secondary space. And I was sort of finding my way. So CEIA certainly gave me that support straight off the bat. My role when I joined the board in 2017 has been VP of Global Networks. So one of the sort of things that I took on straight away was it was instant for me up until that time when I was coming to the conferences, there was only a small amount of people from outside the US that was attending. So I think we had maybe, you know, on average about three folks that would come to the network sessions at the start of each conference. So we've managed to sort of grow that, and I think we're up over 40 members now. So that's a good thing. I think that CIA has got a lot to offer. There's a lot to offer on the PD. There's a lot of work as well that you guys do, for example, with Experience Magazine. We have the Academy. We have the conferences. There's that whole wealth of support. And I think, you know, one of the things that we can do further in the future is that interconnectedness with associations across the globe, to be able to share with each other just exactly what we're doing and generate that interest around value. One of the things I'm delighted and honored to say is that this week, you may have saw, came out in the email notifications that I've got the position of president-elect. And that's something that, I'll be honest, I'm pinching myself about. I feel extremely honored. You know, I'm not an American citizen. I'm not from a US post-secondary institution. I'm from a Canadian institution, and even a Canadian that talks with a funny accent. But, you know, I'm extremely honored. I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve. And I know that I'm going to be working with some wonderful people on the board. So I'm extremely excited about that. Some of the things that I've been working on as well just over the past year is I've been working with a small group of folks in what we've been calling the Quality Outcomes Think Tank. And this was, you know, Eric mentioned earlier, a focus around quality. And one of the things I raised at one of the board meetings was, you know, we have a research arm and research committee, but it'd be good to really try and flush out and create a space around quality, because there's some great things that are going on across the schools in the US. Let's try and give them some support on what are the materials that are out there that if somebody is looking to get into program design or looking to set up something that relates to forms of work integrated learning or even into experiential learning in the future, then where's the space that I can go to maybe get some information that might support me to do that? So we've been crafting a space. I had a meeting just this week with Cara Doyle, who's going to help support us create a web page on the member site within the CE website. And it's going to be called the CIA Quality Outcomes Resource Hub. So it'll give our members the opportunity to have a space where they can go to find information that might be helpful. But what we're really hoping to build is an opportunity where members can share their best practices. So this becomes a two-way relationship, and it's a space for members, and we can actually take pride and actually utilize the strength really of the organization and our membership and the work that they do. So quite excited about that, and hoping at some stage we'll be able to see some of that getting launched out at the upcoming conference.
Ross, you're a true innovator in the field. Let me tell you, I'm taking notes left and right. Between, you know, your efforts of creating more flexible pathways for students, particularly in response to the pandemic, creating a future-ready talent framework that's going to help match candidates with employers and utilize data analysis systems to kind of create some of those matchings, and then also really focusing, I would say, at this larger community level within CEIA of quality outcomes and helping provide resources to a variety of different EL institutions across the world, I think is really, really cutting edge, and you're doing some amazing work. With that said, Ross, the last question we wanted to ask you is since you're kind of pushing the envelope here and you're determining a lot of the new directions within this space, where do you see the future of cooperative and work integrated learning, you know, perhaps over the next decade or so? Where do you see that going?
You know, Eric, it's funny. It's, you know, over my time since I joined the university in 2009, I catch myself almost every year saying there's never been a more exciting time to be involved in the work that we do. And that continues to be very much the case. yeah, COVID certainly set us through for a loop, you know, but what it did generate is the whole sense of opportunity. And it's opportunity, I think, around creating far more flexibility. You know, we were quite rigid in some of the things that we did. There was wiggle room that was there. It's enabled a coming together, if you will, of our stakeholders. So the faculties, the student perspective and the employer perspective, and even certainly up in Canada, the government perspective as well. And there's never been a time where we've really, in my time anyway, where we've seen that. So I think that flexibility is the word that keeps jumping into my head, Eric, when I think about the future, because, you know, we're living in a world where every year, and this is really exciting, we have new generations that enter through our doors. And those new generations are coming with new needs. So when we look at the generations that are coming through now, when they were small, they weren't necessarily playing with a teddy bear or building blocks. They're playing with a device in their an electronic device in their hands, and they are figuring out very quickly and teaching even their parents at the age of three how to navigate these things. So I see the future being something that's being more related to embracing and enhancing that type of technology around learning, that type of technology around how it's applied in the workplace, and the whole more flexibility as to whether or not it might be working virtually or whether it might be working face-to-face. That's the thing that I think will continue to evolve, certainly over the next 5 years, and who knows even what it might look like in 10 years' time.
Ross, that is so inspiring to hear. And it's been great to have you on the show. I know that listeners are going to want to reach out to you, so you may be inundated with emails and social media if you are on social media. So for those listeners that would like to reach out or maybe learn more about your programs and your thinking, what is the best way to contact you?
Yeah, they can send me an email to Ross John, so RossJohn, at uwaterloo.ca.
Terrific. We will also be sure to get that on the website when we publish this. Eric, I couldn't ask for a better first guest on our new platform here. I know I'm going to walk away feeling very inspired to take next steps in my world of experiential learning, and I'm sure that you will do the same. So Ross Johnson, University of Waterloo and CEIA, soon to be president. Ross, thank you for your time today. I look forward to seeing you at the conference.
Thanks. Yeah, and I just want to give a shout out to our team back at Waterloo. As I mentioned, the portfolio and Dr. Nora McCrae and the great work that everybody's doing in all the areas there. That's really what I'm representing today. But also to the CEIA board and the CEIA membership. They're a wonderful group of people, do terrific work. Mike and Eric, you're an example of that as well. But above all, stay safe and well, everyone, and look forward to joining you at the virtual conference coming up in April.
Thanks, Ross. Everyone, thank you for tuning in. This has been a production of the Experience Magazine podcast brought to you by CEIA.